counsel for our next case, you can approach the podium or approach the council table and I'll call the next matter. It is A231074 in re the estate of Joseph Michael Roby. Robby, please correct me if I mispronounce that, counsel.
You're perhaps not a football fan, but it is Robby.
Robby, thank you. Robby, I appreciate it. Have a seat, counsel. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. You're all familiar with our proceedings. You'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. Before you begin speaking, please state your name and identify your client. Let us know how we can reference you this morning. These matters are being recorded. That is the only recording that is permitted. And whenever you're ready, counsel, we are ready for you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Paul Major, and I represent the appellant, Dwayne Roby. In 2001, after a very lengthy divorce proceeding, the appellant obtained a judgment in Florida against her ex-husband. Enforcement efforts were ultimately unsuccessful over the years, and then as the judgment in Florida was about to expire, as Florida has a 20-year statute of limitations for judgments, she wanted to continue to attempt to pursue enforcement in Minnesota. In order to effectuate that, she brought an action in Florida to renew the judgment. There's no question that that action in Florida was timely brought. And during the pendency of that action, her ex-husband passed away and is now deceased. When that occurred, the court in Florida substituted the personal representative of the estate after that individual was appointed. At that time, it was Wesley Roby, and at this time, it is now Jana Cohn. The Florida court issued its final judgment on that action on November 9th of 2022, and under Minnesota law, that means the claim against the appellant's, against her ex-husband's estate was allowed as a matter of law. The probate court thus erred in disallowing the appellant's claim, and this court should reverse and hold that the claim is allowed and then remand the case for payment of the allowed claims. There are three main areas that I am going to address this morning. First is the probate court's jurisdiction. Second is the inapplicability of the Minnesota statute of limitations, which was what the probate court relied on. And then finally, a respondent's argument with respect to personal jurisdiction. So with regard to the probate court's jurisdiction, the probate court's error is in holding that it had exclusive jurisdiction to decide the amount and validity of appellant's claim. The jurisdiction of a probate court is statutory and is laid out in the Minnesota's adoption of the Uniform Probate Code. Under that statutory provision, particularly 524.3-804, there are three ways that someone can present a claim. You can deliver one to the personal representative, you can file it with the court, or you can commence an action against the personal representative. That statute also provides that no claim is required to be filed if a matter is pending against the decedent at the time of death, which is what was in place here. The Florida action was filed in February of 2021. The decedent didn't pass until, I believe, it was November of 2021. So their claim was already proceeding. And once the final judgment was rendered, and this is 524.3-806, a judgment in that proceeding against a personal representative to enforce a claim is an allowance of the claim.
So I noted that neither brief nor the district court's order addressed the effect of the Uniform Enforcement of Foreign Judgments Act. And I'm wondering if that was intentional or perhaps an oversight.
I don't know if it was intentional or an oversight, Your Honor. It was not brought up by either party or the court.
So in deciding what the effect of that Florida judgment would have been, what effect the Minnesota court had to give that judgment in the context of the probate proceeding, I see that you're relying on sort of common law and in particular, older common law. And I'm wondering what the relationship between that law and that act might be, but I don't know that you're prepared to answer that question.
Well, I don't think I am relying on older common law. I think respondent is relying on older common law. And I think the effect of that older common law is that it essentially, if the statute has supplanted it, then it no longer applies. I think here the more important issue, as the decedent passed away, is the effect of the Uniform Probate Code and what the probate code says about how that judgment would be effectuated as a claim against the appellant's estate. Is that's the only way that you could then have, you know, an attempt to recover after the decedent has passed away.
I what is troubling to me is that I think we do need to determine whether the district court correctly decided that Minnesota's statute of limitations rendered the Florida judgment void. You know, it was a valid judgment, timely renewed judgment under Florida law, of course, which is what you're arguing. And sort of what is the effect of our statute of limitations on that judgment? So would you agree that we need to have some way of deciding whether our statute of limitations applies or whether we look to the Florida law for that?
So I actually don't think the court has to address that issue, because the first question is whether the probate court should have actually issued an order on this at all. And that's our first argument, is that as soon as there was a final judgment entered, which occurred before the probate, a final judgment entered in Florida, which occurred before the probate court even addressed the issue, that the claim was already allowed as a matter of law. And so it does not, the probate court no longer had a role to play in deciding the validity and amount of the claim. Certainly the probate court would then continue to administer the estate to the extent necessary and deal with payment of claims. But because the Florida court action was decided, the probate court should have referred to that court for the decision, which is what the probate court allows for. But I think even if the court does decide that it needs to address the statute of limitations issue, I think that's what Jensen is the most helpful on, is that you have a renewed or revived judgment that is entitled to full faith and credit. The only distinction here is that the debtor passed away during the interim of the case, and there's no reason why that should result in a legal distinction, which I think is also the reason why the probate code kind of sets it up in the way that it does, is that you kind of cover all situations. So if somebody passes away, if you've already got a timely action to renew a judgment, then even if the judgment itself is not valid at the time because you're kind of in that interim, right? So the original judgment wouldn't have been able to be enforced, but you have the action already begun to try and renew that judgment, and that, so the new judgment would be valid, then you've kind of covered all of those bases where, you know, there's not kind of something that can fall through the cracks, and there's no reason why there should be a setup where it should be.
Why shouldn't we read the decision of the probate court to mean that the validity of the judgment as a debt that is owed by the estate, as opposed to whether the Florida court properly renewed the judgment? I mean, that's how I sort of read what the district court was saying, or the probate court was saying. Not that it was questioning whether the judgment was renewed in Florida, but whether Minnesota was going to recognize that judgment as a debt of the estate. So why shouldn't we just, why isn't that a reasonable interpretation as to what the district court was saying?
So I think that is what the district court was saying, and I think that response is twofold. And the first is, it shouldn't have gotten to that issue because the probate code provides that as soon as another court that has jurisdiction over the claim, because a timely action was initiated prior to the decedent's death, once it's made that final judgment, then it is allowed as a claim. And so in terms of the probate, the probate court can no longer question that outside of perhaps, you know, personal jurisdiction, which is an issue that's been raised, and I don't think there's any validity to the personal jurisdiction argument. And then secondly, while I think that is the decision the court made, is saying that, you know, we don't think it's valid because of the Minnesota statute of limitations, and I think that's the Jensen case and the reason that this court has held in the past that if you go and take the steps to properly renew a judgment in the original court, then that judgment is going to be recognized here in Minnesota.
So I think my question was inartful, so I'm going to rephrase it. I think why shouldn't we read the Florida court's decision as, or the Florida court's determination of the judgment as to the amount of the judgment and the Minnesota court's ruling on the validity of the judgment as to the collectability of that judgment? I mean, I think that that's really the question. I don't think the Minnesota court is questioning the validity of the entry of judgment in Florida, but instead whether that judgment is appropriately collectible against the estate.
Right. And I think that still comes back to the same provision of the probate code that if you the judge you have a final judgment in that action that was initiated against the decedent, that is an allowance of the claim, which means the claim is valid. And so the Florida court in this instance would get to decide both the validity and amount of the claim, so whether it is allowed. So with briefly with regard to personal jurisdiction, I don't think there's any question that the decedent was subject to personal jurisdiction. That was what the probate court found as well. There are several factual findings or factual findings.
I don't think that's argued. I guess I'll wait for respondent counsel, but I didn't think that was an issue.
They're challenging whether the personal representative was subject to personal jurisdiction, and that flows. Our argument is that the personal jurisdiction over the personal representative flows from the decedent.
I misunderstood. I thought that was acknowledged. Okay, thank you.
I mean, I think it should be. I don't think there's much question here because the decedent, you know, appeared and admitted the Florida court had jurisdiction. Florida law is very straightforward that a foreign personal representative is subject to jurisdiction to the same extent that the decedent would be subject to jurisdiction. So the decedent's admission of jurisdiction in the answer and by failing to bring a motion or raise the defense of lack of personal jurisdiction in the answer would take care of that issue as well. Additionally, I think the Supreme Court case of Estate v. Birnbaum is very helpful here. It addresses a very similar situation where a Minnesota resident commenced an action against the estate of her father in Minnesota, but the father had been domiciled in Texas, and the personal representative in that case had no connection to Minnesota outside of being the personal representative of her father's estate. But the Supreme Court correctly rejected that argument, holding it's the decedent's contacts with Minnesota that matter, and that's the same conclusion supported by Florida law as well. And then the Brown case that the respondents rely upon has not been good law in personal jurisdiction since International Shoe. We don't look at territorial limitations as the standard anymore for personal jurisdiction. I think the other issues with the Florida courts deciding to rule on the issue whether the claim was allowed are supported both by the purpose of the Uniform Probate Code, which is to try and minimize kind of the extra expenses and kind of create uniformity. Additionally, the first file doctrine, which was also raised with the probate court, the courts generally defer to another court that has jurisdiction over the matter when it has already been deciding the dispute. Additionally, res judicata and collateral estoppel both are also applicable reasons here for the probate court should have deferred to the Florida court. But I think, the key is that the probate code explicitly provides that when you have a case pending against the decedent and that case then continues, the personal representative is made a party, which happened here, and then the court enters a final judgment in that case, it's an allowance of the claim. And so the probate court should not have even addressed the issue of whether the claim is allowed or not because it was allowed as a matter of law. So unless the court has any other questions, I would ask that you reverse the probate court and remand the case for payment of claims.
Any other questions from the panel?
No.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. My name is William Peterson. I represent Jenna Cohn, who is the personal representative of the estate of Joseph Michael Robbie. Mr. Robbie lived in Florida from 1970 to 1994. He was married to Dwyn Robbie, who is the claimant here, from 1983 to 1993 when they were divorced in Broward County, Florida. The ex-wife obtained a judgment against Mr. Robbie on March 9th, 2001 for $1,032,203.36, which is reflected in each of the subsequent proceedings. So we're talking about the judgment of 2001. The Mr. Robbie returned to Minnesota in 1994. He established a homestead in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And then in, which is an important factor, is that on September 20th of 2002, the claimant hired a Minnesota attorney, Raymond Charpenter, to docket and collect the $1 million proceeds or the $1 million judgment. And Mr. Charpenter apparently went through some efforts to collect that, and he was apparently unable to. And so nothing happened on that. The 10th anniversary of that came on September 20th of 2012, excuse me, and passed without any independent action. The council hasn't talked about 541.04, but that's the vehicle, the prime vehicle that we're talking about for for renewal of judgments. They certainly had a judgment back in 2002, but it was never renewed.
It was renewed, but it was renewed in accordance with the similar statute under Florida law, and so would you agree we need to decide whether that was good enough to renew it under Florida law in accordance with their, requirements, or did it, by operation of our statute, become a judgment that could never be enforced once the 10 years passed?
The latter. It cannot be enforced. The case law is clear that the issue comes down not to whether it is kind of a, one of my law professors used to say, kind of a floating omnipresence in the sky, but whether it's enforceable. And the courts, I think, in a number of cases have said those are not enforceable. And this court and the Supreme Court have a number of times taken judgments from other states and applied the Minnesota standards. And those standards are important because in the case insurance case that we cite in our materials, the Supreme Court said this is not a matter of full faith and credit, as certain of the other constitutional issues are, but the court said that's a matter for the local, the forum state, in this case Minnesota, because Minnesota has some very specific rights, both as to the decedents and the decedent's estate, homestead exemptions. All of these things are within the Minnesota law, and those are all things that are to be protected. So the Minnesota courts have the ultimate authority. And it's not a matter of Florida law. It's a matter of whether it's enforceable under Minnesota law. And we submit that the claim for $1,023,203.36 lapsed according to law, and particularly according to the Amica versus Wertman case that Judge Rodenberg wrote, And in that case, Judge Rodenberg said, you know, once that time has passed, the claim is, quote, lapsed and is unenforceable.
Then why is it that your client consented to personal, or your client, I should say, the decedent? Why is it that the decedent consented to personal jurisdiction when the renewal of judgment action was filed in Florida?
What he did was he appeared specially to contest jurisdiction over himself. I mean, that's separate. I mean, you're certainly entitled to do that, and that's what he did. I mean, I don't think that the fact that he appeared specially. Now, you know, there's different law.
Maybe my recollection of the record is different. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I thought that when the action was originally filed in Florida to renew the judgment, he consented to personal jurisdiction. Then he died. Then the personal representative appeared, and then later contested jurisdiction. Is that what? I mean, maybe I'm
well. I mean,
wrong.
It was all part of the same case, Your Honor.
Yeah. I understand that, but I thought originally there was a consent to personal jurisdiction.
And that was my question to appellant counsel too. I was not very artful because I thought that it had been that he had subjected himself to jurisdiction in Florida, and even at that point, I mean, the Florida statute clearly says that if somebody dies, that I mean, they specifically spell it out and say that it then would inure to the personal representative as far as a continuing jurisdiction.
Well, you know, I think you know, that the judge in our case you know addressed that issue among others, and in fact did cite some Florida matters. But I mean, the fact
you rely on Brown, you rely on the Brown case, which goes back to 1900 or something in connection with jurisdiction. And what I don't understand in terms of your argument is if, in fact, the decedent had consented to jurisdiction as it related to that renewal, then why would we disregard the personal representative stepping in his shoes?
Well, among other things, I think the case law is clear that the person, among other things, the personal representative is not the identical person to the decedent.
You know, are you relying on Brown for that proposition?
Among other things, yeah. And Brown, you know, in Brown is a secondary. I think there's other authority for that proposition, but Brown is secondary. And in fact, there have been cases that you know, counsel cites International Shoe, and the Supreme Court has said on several occasions this does not mean that that the jurisdictional requirement, personal jurisdiction, is out the window.
Brown hasn't been specifically overruled, but
no.
You know, right now in terms of the probate landscape or any landscape, International Shoe, the whole I can't believe I didn't think in law school I'd ever be arguing International Shoe. All right. It just seems that we've broadened those jurisdictional avenues because that seems to make more sense in terms of common application.
Well, I don't agree that International Shoe, at least, you know, that it hasn't made a wholesale change for, you know, as to jurisdictional purposes. I think that's clear from some of the cases that have commented on International Shoe is that you know there's it wasn't just opening the door and admitting anything. I mean it had a particular purpose and personal jurisdiction was not one of the functions there. Now in a Supreme Court
when the judgment was reentered in Florida. Why isn't that a new judgment for purposes of the running of the statute of limitations?
Well, I think it's on the same claim. I mean, as you can see from the paperwork that's in the file here.
It may be the same claim, but I mean that's what happens with the renewal of any judgment. It's the same claim,
right.
But judgment is entered again.
And Minnesota is in control of what particular judgments should be honored. And I would.
I mean, maybe my question again was a little inartful, which is not unusual. So, if the judgment in Florida was entered again in 2022, right? Then why doesn't that start the 10-year Minnesota statute of limitations ticking again? Or maybe we need to turn to the Uniform Enforcement of Foreign Judgments Act to get some guidance there.
Well, interesting that you bring up that point, Your Honor, because that's a point that was raised in the seminal decision that AMICA was based upon, and that is the Newell versus Dart case. And in Newell versus Dart, as you perhaps recall, that was, you know, Justice Mitchell. So I think he probably speaks well for Minnesota law, certainly as it was established. And in Newell versus Dart, Justice Mitchell said, it is suggested by counsel for the creditor that a new judgment against Adolphus Dart might be rendered in this action, which is exactly what we're talking about there. And he went on to say, we think such relief would be entirely foreign to the nature and manifest purpose of this action, which was renewal. And Mr. Newell, essentially, they found that his attempted renewing did not renew it. And that was one of a number of cases where any attempts at continuing a void judgment in Minnesota.
But again, I come back to Florida. Florida said, yeah, we're renewing this judgment. And so then we're in a prickly situation, right, between our states.
I'm sorry? We have when?
That puts us in a little bit of a prickly situation. We've got a renewed judgment from Florida that a Minnesota court is refusing to recognize. So what's...
Well, and that issue has come up in a number of cases in which this court and the Supreme Court have looked at judgments from other states and said, no, Minnesota will not honor these. These are not enforceable. That's what the Supreme Court said in the Knifer case, which we cite. That's which was an interpretation on a Wisconsin judgment that had been certainly properly got obtained in Wisconsin. Also Wisconsin was the Electromeasure case, which we also cite, in which they threw out the judgment that had been entered in Wisconsin. This is a Minnesota-specific decision because the probate court has some powers as to determining the validity of claims. Similarly, in the Florida case, Growth Leasing, also cited in our brief.
What if the judgment had never been docketed in Minnesota? What if it had been docketed somewhere else? Would our statute of limitations still apply?
I think so. I think it would.
Why?
Because the statute says no action shall be maintained upon a judgment or decree of a court of the United States or of any state or territory thereof, unless begun within 10 years after the entry of the judgment. So, I mean, you know, 541.04 is pretty specific, we would maintain on this, and is consistent with the cases that I cited.
And so it's, just to be clear, it's your view that that statute impacts the enforceability of judgments from anywhere in the United States. You can't bring your judgment here after 10 years.
Well, I think that may be a little speculative because that isn't the case here. They tried to do it, and that's the key thing. Is they came in 2002 and did not renew it according to 541.04, which was in effect in 2012, and they essentially allowed that to lapse. And they are stuck with, you know, just like if I say, gee, I had a car accident, 7 years ago, I can't sue. I mean, you know, the statute of limitations has run. And the Minnesota court, I mean, especially if you look at the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court in the Sun case, a decision written by Justice Scalia, in which he went through in great detail that when you're dealing with statutes of limitations, this is up to the states. This is not a matter of full faith and credit, even though, you know, the people that were before the Supreme Court argued, yeah, this is full faith and credit. The Supreme Court said, no, this is not. I mean, Minnesota has particular needs in probate for the administration of the estate to protect the family, to protect the homestead, unlike most other states. In fact, I've had homestead matters in a number of cases, and the homestead statute is constitutional backed in Minnesota, and I think the same thing would apply here. Is, you know, we've got a homestead, so does Florida get to determine what the assets, how the assets are to be managed?
Council.
I don't think so. Minnesota has
council.
Minnesota under the state.
Your time
okay,
has expired.
Has exclusive council. Jurisdiction under 541.01.
Thank you. Anything else from the panel? Okay. Thank you very much, counsel. Counsel, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think Judge Fisher's point is directly on that we're talking about a renewed judgment, and it is a new judgment in under both Florida's law and Minnesota law. I think that's what the Jensen case recognized and why it said you can go to the original jurisdiction, renew the judgment. We're going to recognize that renewed judgment in Minnesota because it is a new judgment, even if it's still based on the underlying claim. With regards to the question of the record, you can look at document 44, exhibits H and J for the complaint and the answer. That's where the decedent admitted to personal jurisdiction by failing to, I believe he both expressly admitted in terms of admissions in the answer itself, but also implicitly admitted by failing to raise the issue of lack of personal jurisdiction and bring a motion. There's cases cited in our brief that law in Florida is the same as it is in Minnesota. You have to raise it or you waive that issue as well. With regards to all of the cases that respondent was talking about in terms of the Minnesota statute of limitations, none of those cases are relevant here because none of them address a situation where a foreign judgment was renewed in that foreign jurisdiction and then brought to Minnesota again. The problem here is that respondent is relying upon the docketed judgment. The claim has never been based on the docketed judgment. It's always been based on the original judgment in Florida that was validly renewed under Florida law, and it's entitled to full faith and credit under Jensen, and additionally supported by the probate statutes at issue. And I think the most important one, 524.3-806, could not be more straightforward. A judgment in a proceeding in another court against a personal representative to enforce a claim against the decedent's estate is an allowance of the claim. And so as soon as that final judgment was entered in Florida on November 9th of 2022, appellant's claim was allowed as a matter of law. That occurred before the probate court even addressed the situation. And so there is no question that the probate court erred in deciding whether or not appellant's claim was valid or not. Under Minnesota law, it was valid as soon as that final judgment was entered. Unless this court has any other questions, I would ask that you reverse and hold the probate court erred in finding that it had exclusive jurisdiction and in denying appellant's claim and remand the case for payment of claims.
Anything else from the panel?
No.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. Thank you very much for your arguments and your submission. The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory time period.
Thank you.
Thank you.